This prophet's defining characteristic was social reform. When Muhammad experienced such things and taught them, the socially disadvantaged followed suit. That's why Western scholars of Islam, like Manku Biwat, called Muhammad a social reformer or socialist. And when Christianity spread, its advantage was its educational nature. So, rather than being a vibrant voice, it was already institutionalized. When a church was formed, there were priests, or pastors, and
a certain fervor emerged. Once a tradition was established, people tended to follow it. But this new movement, a single word, sent a powerful message to the disadvantaged. Yes, this person gave us hope all along, saying that what he said was true and that if we do as he did, good things will happen to us. Revelation is a miracle.
But Jesus, who appears in the Quran, performs many miracles. A prophet who performs miracles. But why do they revere Muhammad, who didn't perform miracles, so much and become like this as a prophet? That's why Islam has such strong dominance. He doesn't perform miracles. He performs miracles, but the
Quran itself is a miracle. Muslims think of the Quran as the Bible, and the way Christians think of the Quran and Muslims
think of the Quran are completely different. For example, if Christians look at it, they think, oh, Muslims revere books to the point of who is a bookworm? If I were to use the support like this, I'd be in big trouble. I'd have to think, oh, it's a big deal. I'd be
dead. Quote, I'd be in big trouble. So, if you're boiling ramen and quickly boiling ramen and you don't have a book, you'll put the Bible on top. Isn't that right?
Who doesn't? Question mark. If you really don't have one, then that's
not right. But if we go to a cathedral or a church, the Bible's cover is all pressed down. That's not good. There are people who don't bring their own Bibles, right? They don't bring their own Bibles to cathedrals or churches. It's the same on the internet, right? But if you look before that, if you look behind a church, there are a lot of Bibles. They're so old and torn. This is something unimaginable in Islam. It's
unimaginable. It's impossible. You can't just put it down like that. You always put it on a tray. And you don't do this. The book itself is the cleanest one. Yes, yes, yes. So what do you say now? People who don't know will say, are you worshiping the book? You worship it like a cross. The Quran, quote, it's amazing. That's
why the biggest mistake Koreans, especially those who believe in Jesus, make about the Quran is not realizing how important it is to Muslims and treating it like just another book.
This is extremely dangerous. But Islam, Muslims, you know, Christians, Catholics, Protestants, people, generally think of religion as something deep within their hearts. A belief they should live by, and so on. But Muslims often seem to control not only their inner selves but also their outer selves. Actually, that's the case. If we look at our daily lives, yes, yes. So, in the Middle Ages, Christianity was probably like that too. So, there was a time in human history when that ended. In Christian civilization. But in the Muslim world, hasn't that time arrived yet? I think it's more about that difference. Yes. The biggest difference between Christianity and Islam is that Christianity is a religion that values words. Ahem. Yes. Islam is a religion that values actions. So Judaism and Islam are the same thing.
What to eat, what to drink, how to behave. These are all meticulously regulated.
They're religions of law, these two. So Muslims and Jews live together well. Yes, because they're similar. Jews and Muslims are always waging war and fighting.
No, this is a modern problem. If they live together, Jews are given a choice. Do you want to live with Christians? Do you want to live with Muslims? It was the Middle Ages.
Of course, if I were Jewish, I'd live with Muslims. Christians are uncomfortable. They only talk about religion dominating their lives. Here, it's worth doing. Even not being able to eat together is similar. Are you just talking?
Christians are just talking. Christians keep harassing Jews by saying, "You're the ones who killed Jesus." Yes, but Muslims don't say that. But eating meat together is similar. What you don't do is similar. How great is that? First of all, you don't eat meat, not even pork. So, it's a religion of law. Judaism and Islam are like that. God has long taught us how humans should live, and they are religions where humans seek God's law to live. What to eat and what not to eat. But Islam and Christianity aren't like that. So, if I had to express it in a way that resonates most with Christians, I'd say Matthew chapter 11 or 15. I always get confused. Chapter 11, chapter 15, verse 11. The Pharisees were chasing Jesus and harassing him. The disciples couldn't do anything, but now the problem was eating. Jesus said, "It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you, but what comes out of you. It's not the walking that defiles you, but the words that go out, the thoughts that defile you." Quote. And in doing so, they broke the dietary laws of Judaism.
Right? In
Islam and Judaism, what you eat is important.
So, Jews say it's seduction, and Islam says it's halibut, but Christians eat it all, right? They eat pork too, Christians, especially like pork and lamb.
Right, they really like it, but Islam and Judaism don't eat pork. Since I don't eat pork, I don't eat gelatin, vanilla ice cream, or anything like that.
And cosmetics too.
Yes, that's the difference. That's the biggest difference.
Done.
Yes. Christianity, you can eat anything thanks to Jesus. You can eat anything, but
Jesus created freedom from the law.
So, yeah. In Korea, if you want to become a pastor or priest, you go to seminary. Do they teach law at seminary? No, they teach theology. In Islam or Judaism, the best school is law school.
Don't you have a rabbi? Rabbi, this is the Almug.
So, the religious elite in the Christian church are theologians. In Islam and Judaism, the religious elite are jurists.
That's the difference.
So, Koreans can't help but feel uncomfortable with Judaism or Islam. There
are too many things you can't eat. Christ is practical. Yes. Oh, it's not just that not being able to eat is inconvenient. Yes. Well, religion has become a part of our lives and plays a big role in this way. But in your case, as you just mentioned, Judaism is similar, so I think a lot of my life has to be lived according to its laws, right? If it were a country where only Muslims gather, the national laws and religious laws would be similar, so there wouldn't be a big problem. But it's not like that for us at all. You can eat pork, for example, and various other things will clash now. When there is a clash, usually the national laws are the laws of our lives, and then the religious laws. In religion, there are things that need to be observed, such as observing them on Sundays, so there isn't much conflict these days, but for Muslims, that's how they control me 24 hours a day, 360 days a year, so don't you constantly clash with our laws and norms? In fact, there is some flexibility. For example, you can't eat it. It's not that you absolutely have to not eat it. You need to. You can eat it when you need to. It's written in the Quran. Yes, it's okay to eat it when you need to or have no other choice.
But if you keep trying to follow that, then that's when problems arise.
Fundamentalism. And it would be fine if you were the only ones not eating it. But you can't eat it. You can't stop people from eating it. For example, if I go to Saudi Arabia and eat pork, it's not sold in Saudi Arabia.
Done. There are places that sell pork in Saudi Arabia. But yes, for those who need it, as far as I know, there are people who can buy pork.
Oh, it's just that there isn't much demand, so there isn't much.
Done. Yes, it's sold in the market. Yes, only those with permission can buy it, and it's allowed to be eaten in Muslim communities, but not generally.
So, for example, if I drink alcohol or something like that, We can't criticize people who eat certain foods. They eat it because they're Muslim. But if I went to Iran, Iraq, or Saudi Arabia and drank alcohol and ate pork belly,
I probably wouldn't be able to survive.
No, that's not true. But there's some tolerance.
These days, there are countries where you can drink alcohol, like in hotels. That's not a big problem, but I think what Koreans find most uncomfortable these days is that
Muslim workers come to Korea and keep asking for things they don't have. For example, there were a lot of such cases at that company. When workers came in, they would ask for a prayer room at the factory. For example, and for prayer time to be set aside while working. And then when we went to the cafeteria, they kept saying, there's a lot we can't eat at the company cafeteria. So instead of using the Choisa restaurant, we should give us money. We need to have Islamic food in our room. Quote, that's
right. So, because of those requests, they feel uncomfortable, but the rate has
dropped a lot now. It's similar to asking for kimchi when we go abroad. But I think Koreans are particularly uncomfortable with it these days. They've been exposed to it so much, so, yeah, I've never encountered it before, and Koreans are quite tough when it comes to food and what they serve. But I don't know for sure, but the Middle East is the birthplace of Judaism, right? And about 200 years ago, yes, 2 years ago, Christianity was born, and they lived that way until yes, the Stone Age, about 600 years ago. Yes, 622 years ago. Yes, dot. That's when Islam came into being. It was a kind of connection, right, dot. Before that, yes, everyone just believed in Judaism. No, they believed in Christians.
I think there were Jews in the Arabian Peninsula, which was part of Islam.
Yes. And there were Christians, but generally, the Arabian Peninsula was a polytheistic society. There was also some Zoroastrianism, right? Oh, that had an influence on the area adjacent to Iran. But if you look at the western part of the Arabian Peninsula, where Mecca is now, where the Muhammad was, there were Christians and Jews, but the overwhelming majority did not believe in monotheism. Dot. Those who believed again found it easier. In fact, the Protestant religion is a very difficult religion. But then, their hearts were unified. Yes, Muhammad is now a new religion. From our perspective, it's a new religion, and from a historical perspective,
it's a religion that Muslims have re-established this year. A revival.
But that's what that startup is, and I'm curious about that too. Jesus performed various miracles. Like, he fed a lot of people with a few fish and a few barley loaves. And he died and came back to life, so yes. Even complete idiots would stand up, so recruiting would have been easy. So, how did Muhammad establish his clan without so many people following him and writing down his words? Did he do it with a sword? No, Muhammad. Well, we have to think about what we mean by prophet. The word prophet, which we sometimes mistranslate, means someone who speaks on behalf of others. A prophet.
Yes, a prophet. Someone who speaks on behalf of God should be a representative. But a prophet is like a fortune teller who predicts the future, so we also use the word prophet. In short, the defining characteristic of a prophet is social reform. If
you look at the prophet's words, from the Old Testament through Judaism, the prophets consistently say things the powerful don't want to hear. That's right, yes, Jesus was like that, and his every word was like that. Isaiah was like that too, yes, he said, let
justice flow like a river. Quote, that's an incredible statement. It's about protecting the vulnerable. When Muhammad experienced that and taught it, the socially vulnerable followed suit. That's why Western scholars of Islam, like Manku Mary Watt, called Muhammad social reformers or socialists. Well, there
was definitely an element of that.
Christianity,
though, was a difficult concept for those who were later persuaded by Muhammad. He seemed to have brought much more advanced theories and such. That's why Christianity didn't spread that far. Yes, and when the Christian church spread, the pros and cons of Christianity were that it became a sectarian organization. It was a form of proselytization. So, rather than a lively voice, it's already institutionalized. When a church is formed, there's a priest, a pastor, and a certain enthusiasm. Dot. When a tradition is established, people tend to follow it. Well, this new movement, a single word, sent a powerful message to the vulnerable. It gave them hope that what these people said was true, and that if we follow them, good things will happen to us. If you think about it, Donghaek, the Christian faith, originally spread that way, and that's true. Christianity
at the time was interesting. Many Arabs believed in Christianity. They
believed in Christ. Oh, right. Paul even went all the way to the Arabian Peninsula, preaching and traveling.
Many Arabs around him believed in Christianity, and in this region where Muhan Madras existed, the Muhan Madras movement was extremely strong. Later, even though they shared the same Arabic language, more Arab Christians converted to Islam. Even
later,
yes, even though they fought together with Muhammad, there were still
more people who didn't convert. Yes, nowadays, it's rare for Muslims to convert to another religion. Even in the past, it wasn't very common for Muslims to convert to another religion. That's because this was the era of the Near East. Conversion itself. Well, conversion was almost punishable by death. The great religion, yes. So, sometimes I think about it. Why don't Muslims convert to Christianity, and why do Christians convert to Islam? Why did Islam spread more easily than Christianity? Thinking about it, yes. I
wonder if the organized churches at the time made it difficult for believers.
Yes. Christianity has already become organized and institutionalized. Yes, 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 yes. Didn't its vitality decline a bit? And Christians fight a lot, don't they? Yes, yes. But if we look at the Quran, if we look at the expansion of Islam during the Middle Ages, it's like a one-handed Quran and a one-handed sword. Yes, no, but that's actually wrong. No, that's wrong. Do you believe it by force? Do you not believe it? No, that's wrong. Should I give you a sword? The Saudi flag even has a sword. So there is a sword, but
the truth is that after the death of Muhammad in 632, Muslims spread to the Arabian Peninsula and crossed over. They crossed over to Jerusalem in 638. By 650 or 670, the Middle East as we know it had become almost entirely Muslim.
At that time, was conversion forced or not? Well, this is one misconception we have. Dot. Oh, it was optional. No, it wasn't. We didn't convert them. If they converted, there's one thing that Muslims find difficult. Muslims conquer, right? When they conquer, they collect taxes, right? Taxes are only collected from non-Muslims. The Indian tax.
But if a non-Muslim converts, the number of
Indians decreases. Oh. So we prayed to prohibit conversion. And